Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Oh, hey, didn't see you there. Was just celebrating a little bit. Welcome on into the Game Day Rewind. On a Game Day Rewind, when we're going to talk about when the Cleveland Browns took down the Baltimore Ravens in Baltimore today on a last-second field goal by Dustin Hopkins, the Cleveland Browns in a humongous victory for, I don't think just for this week, and I don't think just for the perception of this season, but potentially for the perception of this team moving forward, the way the Cleveland Browns won today. We're here to party. We're here to party. We're here to celebrate. We're here to talk about the game. We're here to talk about some things that need to get cleaned up still, but we're here to celebrate this game. I'm your host, Michael Keefe. Joining me on the show tonight, we should have some other guys jumping in as we go along, but right now, it's just me and the one and only, find him online, Ward on Sports, Brad Ward. Brad, it's a party today. It's a party. Today's a party. This week's a party. Life is a party.
Unreal. Unreal game. Just absolutely unbelievable. Like, I mean, I was in shock. Listen, this was really, it was special. It was a special game. Andrew's here.
Oh, we can bring him in. I was going to give him like an intro, but I guess he doesn't need an intro. Everybody knows him. Hey, it's Andrew Spade.
Hey.
We keep going, Brad, and then we'll let Andrew talk.
Listen, there was, this team had everything stacked against them today. No tackles. They lost Denzel Ward. They had four third downs, stops negated by very iffy penalties. They were in, Baltimore. They muffed a punt after a huge stop. Got two of those stops negated. Everything that could have gone wrong went wrong, and they did not flinch once. They were down 14 in the fourth quarter after battling back and kept getting pushed away, and they did not flinch. Down 14, they made the drives they made to have. They made the plays they made to have. I mean, it was incredible. This is what makes this team special, right? This is what makes this team so likable, is that they make these plays. They come together as a team in these huge moments. This is like a culmination of what this whole season kind of has been today. Just a really special win, one that I won't forget for a long time. Stefanski, I think you said it, Andrew, I don't want to steal your words, but like a staple win for Stefanski, and I don't know if that's the verbiage you used, but...
I would argue that it's the signature win of his career.
Yes, there you go.
Signature. A lot of people, when I said that, said the playoff game, but the Steelers handed them that game. The Browns tried to hand this game to the Ravens, and they still won it. So to me, from a overcoming adversity standpoint, from a keeping the team cohesive and believing even when things were really stacking up against them through some of their own mistakes, some of just how good the Ravens are as a team, some of the officiating, they still persisted. From that perspective, to me, the adversity that they overcame to win this game, being down 14 in the fourth quarter on the road in Baltimore against the 7-2 football team, I know that the Pittsburgh win is more meaningful for the city, right? Because it's a playoff win, et cetera, et cetera. But there was no fans in that, stadium. Like I said, the Steelers just couldn't stop turning the ball over. It's not.
And there wasn't a Kevin Stefanski. In that.
Yeah, right.
He was his signature win.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yes. Whereas this had his fingerprints all over it, in my mind. The way that he found answers on drives when they needed to have answers. The plays that he dialed up in meaningful moments. I mean, I'm doing this on the fly, but I would be hard pressed to think of a time where they had a had to have it moment where the play call, you were like, what was that?
Yeah.
I think they were 9 of 18 on third and fourth down against Baltimore in Baltimore. I mean, it's tremendous. It's absolutely tremendous what they accomplished today. There's really no other way to say it. And I think the players, the coach, the general man, I mean, the whole organization deserves a gigantic amount of congratulations, because 100%. This is just not a game that a lot of teams win. There was a stat in our Slack about they were trailing for 59 minutes and 20 seconds of a game.
Yep.
And they won. It's the first time that's happened this millennium, right? So, yeah, there's I mean, this show could be an hour of us just taking turns gushing about how cool this is.
I'm in for that. by the way, that Andrew just introduced himself to you guys. Andrew Spade has joined the party, and look who else has joined the party. It's Jake Burns. Follow those guys on Twitter. Jake, man, it's like an opening gush fest right here. It's an opening gush fest. Why don't you just continue the trend, man? How you feeling?
Well, I was pretty disgusted with their effort for, I'm just kidding. Yeah. It was great. Yeah. Like,
you remember that one throw on 2nd and 10 early in the game? Awful.
They called a cover 3 beater and an obvious. Yeah. So listen, you guys have already laid it out pretty well. I was a couple minutes late. I think that this was one of those games, kind of thinking back to Pittsburgh was kind of one of them early in the year. And then I think the Seattle one's another one that we all experience where it's like the ebb and flow stuff is what the Colts game too. This is what, I don't know, maybe the fourth game like this, where I kept looking at the clock in the fourth quarter before the Newsom interception. And I'm like, there's like 10 minutes of football left. This is crazy. It's just a lot of things transpiring in a game where you compact like three different games of wild things happening into one. And I'm sure I'm just like everybody else out there. I couldn't believe they had an opportunity to win it. It felt like every time they'd go up, they'd go down. It's a punt return drop. It's a holding in the end zone, on defensive side. And like, it just felt like every time they'd get up, they'd shoot themselves. And I thought that the quote from Hopkins about being an arsonist and then being able to put out his own fire was so funny because it was like the whole day was encapsulated in one moment there where you get the wild return of the Newsom interception, and then you miss the PAT and you're like, I know that's going to hurt. It's going to haunt us. And then it didn't. And like, you don't want to say the quiet things out loud right now, which is you kind of feel like they're believing they can do these things in a way that we've been talking about for years, like years of like, can they just figure out how to win these games? And they're kind of doing it right in front of our eyes. And yep. And I think that, some things you can control and some things you can't. The San Francisco game, a missed kick, the officiating at the end of the Colts game. But eventually those things have to like work out for you. And you just do enough putting yourself in a good position. And then you start to believe that the things will work out in your favor. And you get a really incredible performance from the quarterback in the second half. And anything can happen. And the biggest thing I'll say before I shut up is like, the Browns need to, I think that we've talked about this a lot. At least I know Andrew and I have talked about a lot of like the belief in Deshaun Watson from the team perspective and himself, his own perspective. And today goes so far in that. Like, I'm sure Deshaun, he's talking to his people. Is like, this felt like the most I'm back game I've had. This felt like a lot of the Houston games that I've played where he controlled the second half in a really, really fun way. Like, the fourth quarter, I think Lamar was 1 for 5 for like 12 yards and an interception. Watson was 8 for 8 for 88 yards and a touchdown. So like, that's like what you want. I know we're all kind of like fighting with our nails and reaching out and trying to grab a hold of any moment that can get you to the point of justifying the trade and the contract. Well, today was a little bit of that, right? A big bit of that. And that is what is really neat about today, because again, I know we talked about the Arizona game. What do we want to come out of it? Like, we wanted Watson to feel like he was back and he had those moments. But to get a game where Watson controls the second half in a very unique way, doing a lot of the old school things that we all liked about when we, when the player was traded here, on top of the defense rising up and meeting several of the moments and then them overcoming, like, I'm just not sure you're going to find a more thorough and satisfying Cleveland Browns win, unless they win some real meaningful games at the end of the season, right? Like, that is as far as regular season games go. I don't think we're going to find one much better than that. So That's special stuff. And I'm sure we are all just, I wish we had all the cameras on all the people with the kick, because that was just a really cool moment, of like this.
I wish I had cameras on all four of us.
Right.
I just wish I had cameras on all four of us, because I went crazy.
Yep.
I went crazy. And you know what? I watched the game. I figured out something I kind of hated. When you stream games, right? Like a lot of times I'm watching on like YouTube TV, it's delayed. So if you're watching on Twitter, you're going to find out what happened. Mm-hmm. Well, my mom invited me over for the game. I took the kids over there. We were watching over there. She's got straight old cable, just regular old normal cable. And that day is as live as it gets. And so normally in a big moment, I'll cheat and I'll be like, I need to know what's going to happen.
Will you really?
I need to know what's going to happen.
Oh, this is shocking. This is scandalous.
I couldn't do it tonight. I'm so mad. Anyone tips, picks, or anything like that.
This is scandalous.
I couldn't do it tonight. I couldn't. I had to watch it. I had to see it live. My heart was beating through my chest.
I'll admit, I watch YouTube TV with the NFL stat page up, and I know everything. I got my wife for like 8 straight plays on like calling what was going to happen.
Are you as shocked as I am?
I am like, shocked.
Yeah. I can't.
How can you watch a game like that?
This has a chance to destroy this entire show, because we can spend the next hour talking about this.
I like knowing in real time. I like knowing the second the fans are in the stadium know what happened. Oh, I like knowing. God.
I can't.
I agree. I'm with you.
I accidentally 100%. Spoiled the Newsom pick 6, and I was so mad at myself, and the people I was watching with were not super pleased about it either.
I can't help it. I know that that information is sitting there, and I can't not look at it. I can't. I've tried. Agreed. I can't. So
that's so funny.
Especially, I'm so tense. Like the moment, like the field goal today. I'm so tense.
Yeah.
I'm so nervous about what's going to happen. If I can find out sooner, just to get my emotions going, I'm fine.
If you look at the NFL stat page, they'll like, if something, a penalty happens or something crazy where the guy typing up the result of the play has to spend a long time doing it, like YouTube will run the play and I'll be like, all right, some penalty happened or some interception happened or something stupid. So it was like Hopkins was ready to kick the ball and I'm like, why have they not given us an answer on what is going on here? But you come to realize it was like the penalty had happened, which is funny because Hopkins could have kicked it again, ironically, but like, that was a moment of like, look at the TV. I'm like, what's going on here? Why do we not have an answer? Did it go through or not? So yeah, really, really fun, man. Just a fun day of football.
Boys, before we get into some more fun stuff, I do have to get into the chat here, because you guys, first of all, tons of people watching over on YouTube. You saw the post that I put up earlier. If you're watching on YouTube, smash the like button, make sure you are subscribed to the channel. Come on. If you're watching on Twitch, check out the people that have been gifting subs over on Twitch. We got to call them all out real quick. Warpath, EJH, OG Philly, Pat Shea, Paul Spencer. Warpath then came back and did more. Matt Darcy did 2 rounds of gifted subs. E. Gillen did gifted subs. We've had gifted subs going off the charts. And so I just want to shout out everybody that jumped in and gifted subs on Twitch to their fellow viewers and watchers. Appreciate you guys more than you'll ever know. All right, boys, so let's walk through this thing. And I think, you know, it's real easy to start at the quarterback, and we're going to get to the quarterback because what that man did in the second half of this game should have everybody feeling pretty darn good. But let's first start, and Andrew, you kind of got us off on this. This was my note. Let's start with the coaching all the way around.
Yep.
Because for the second time this season, they went into a divisional opponent. For the second time this season, they got punched right in the mouth right from the start with a pick 6 that happened in the Steelers game. They went down 14-0 and nothing was going right. They were maybe getting into field goal range. They were kicking field goals while Baltimore was really threatening. And it just felt like this game was getting away time after time after time. But talk about, boys, what you saw from Kevin Stefanski offensively and what you saw from the team defensively that you really loved and that helped them get back into this game.
Yeah, I think the first thing I want to talk about is the Fox broadcast crew threw this up at a certain point, I think in the first half. You know, their home road splits this year, record wise, points allowed by the defense wise.
Yep.
That was starting to feel like maybe it was going to be one of the narratives that we were going to walk out of this game with, right? If they were going to give up 30, 40 points and struggle to score, it's like, okay, so we're one team at home and a different team on the road, a little bit of a Jekyll and Hyde situation. But, you know, I think, you know, to me, the most meaningful thing from a coaching staff perspective is that, as I said before, the play calling answers that Kevin Stefanski found reliably in third down situations. And I think with a bullet, the number one thing is managing that final drive to take 4+ minutes and end the game on a kick. That is so hard to do in the NFL. It's almost impossible to get that right. And I think we all had a thought during that drive. Justin Tucker's on the other sideline. If they leave Lamar a minute with a timeout, we know how this story ends. We've seen that story. So I think, there's a lot of different things that the coaching did today. And I think there were some sloppy things, right? There's a 12-man penalty on the special teams, which is almost unfathomable. So Stefanski addressed it in his victory speech afterwards. He said the guys are going to be in the building tomorrow because they got a lot to fix. So, and that's true on both the coaching staff and the players. They have a lot. Think about what the score of this game would have been if the Browns didn't throw a pick six, drop a punt at the 10, commit all the crucial third down penalties that they committed. Think about then what the result of this game would be. But I think from a positive perspective, managing the end of the game that way, not just that drive, but the drive before, the 10-minute drive that ate up so much time and really kind of dominated the Ravens defense. Kevin Stefanski, as a play caller, as the designer of the offense, as the guy that has to have the answers, deserves just an immense amount of credit for getting those things right, because if he makes one mistake there, it's the end of the Seahawks game again, where we're talking about running on, not running on third and two when PJ spikes it off the guy's helmet, right? So that to me is what I would highlight is when the chips were down, he outcoached John Harbaugh. And I think we all saw during the game, they put up Harbaugh's cartoonish record against the Browns. That it's hard to do. It's hard to outcoach a guy like John Harbaugh, but Kevin Stefanski did it.
Go ahead, Brad.
Yeah, I was just going to say that I think that as far as coaching goes, at some point, probably was after the OBJ, even before that, probably the OBJ touchdown, the defense figured this out, sort of. They found themselves and got a pretty good grasp on what they were doing with the Ravens and slowed them considerably to what we were seeing at the beginning of the game. And I think once that happened and they started to really get after Lamar and disrupt him, it felt like they had a chance. But how long was the game going to last, right? And how many things were going to happen that they were going to have to overcome? And that's where I'll just say, I won't get into the X's and O's, but I'll kind of repeat what I said earlier. It was a relentless pursuit of overcoming these things. It was just a nonstop, relentless team effort to overcome no matter what happened. So if you think about the way the end of the first half ends, right? And then, which is unfortunate, right? Because you wanted to get points there. They come out, they score on OBJ. Then you go on a 10-minute 17-play drive. And you get another stop, but they muff the punt, right? And then you stop them inside their own 20 twice, right? And those get called back on penalties. And all just they had to overcome so much, but nobody even gave an inch. And Watson was spectacular in the second half, making plays. Amari Cooper is just a godsend. I don't know where the Browns team would be without him. He is just amazing. If you guys saw the video of Amari, I'm sure you saw it, right? Of his Instagram live in the locker room. I mean, how great
is that
stuff?
That's what my house looked like, by the way.
Right, mine too. Yeah. And it was just me. But exactly. It looked the same. Yeah.
All the parts.
I mean, that stuff is unbelievable and so much fun. This coaching staff, first of all, Schwartz deserves a lot of credit for figuring out a way to slow down Lamar in this offense, right? Besides that one slant, which he got burned on, they really slowed them down considerably in the second half, right? We gave up the ball in bad spots, and the defense played really well and played physical. And Stefanski was great play calling, but the difference was stuff like this. If you recall, I'll just point out one small instance, right? like 2 games ago, Stefanski called, I think it was Deshaun's maybe first, maybe it was earlier in the season, I don't know. It was a third down, but they called a little out to on a third down to Ford like they did in this game, and he threw it in the dirt. And everybody was like, what a, well, he didn't throw it in the dirt this time, and it got the first down. And I just want to point out, just the smallest difference, the thing of the quarterback actually making the throw can make the play caller look so much better. And I know that we kill the play caller all the time, but really it was just the difference of a guy actually making a proper throw to a guy, and he gets the first down and he looks like a genius. And other times he was getting ripped for calling that, you know, 3 games ago. So great play calling, but more than anything, like the buy-in from this team, the buy-in, the belief that they can come back from no matter what they're facing was just incredible, and something that makes me I just love this team. Like, I really like this team. I like the I do. I like the personality of this team. Like, and like last year's team was hard to like, right? The infighting, all that stuff. This year's team is so easy to like. They're so easy to like.
Yeah. Jake, to Brad's point there, it felt like from an organizational, this makes it a little bit bigger about, than this week, but it felt like from an organizational perspective, there was a moment in this game, maybe not one that you can point to, but just certainly going into that second half, that they just decided they weren't going to be the same team anymore. They weren't going to do that. From the coaching to the players, the attitude in the second half was outrageous from the Cleveland Browns, both offensively and defensively. We keep getting comments here in the chat about that play on that last drive leading up to the field goal where Jerome Ford was running in the entire offensive line. And basically, the entire team got behind him and shoved him downfield about 15 yards. The attitude from this team, it really felt like a, hey, we're not the same Browns. We're going to move forward, and we're changed. We're different now. It felt like that kind of a game happened in front of our eyes.
Yeah, I think when you look at it, I'm sure it all happened so quickly in the second half. You guys would all agree with me that like the 24-9 scenario, right? You know, the pretty quick touchdown that happens in the second half on that opening drive where, you know, if you think about where you went in at halftime, when I'm sure people were pretty upset, Hunter, thanks for that, man. Really, really kind of you.
Shout out
that.
To you, Hunter, man.
And Bradley
That's really
Bruns
cool.
as well for some nice comments there, guys. We really appreciate it.
Oh yes.
Like, they go into half 17-9. I'm sure you guys, like me, were really excited at the moment that Mike Ford gets an intercept. Really sloppy Lamar Jackson game. Probably a discussion for another time. He did not play well. But, you know, you don't even kick. You don't get a chance to kick that field goal. So I think we're all pretty disgruntled because, you know, if you look at the first half, fellas, they had some drives, a 10-play, 12-play drive that both resulted in just field goals, short field goals, getting down near the goal line. You certainly saw where that Ravens defense, which is the best red zone defense so far this year, came into play, right? And then they get the blocked field goal, which is so rare with Tucker to get that blocked field goal, only get another field goal. So it's still 17-9. You get that swing because the blocked field goal happens with 1:12, and then the Ravens still, you know, get it back with enough time to go do a Justin Tucker thing we've seen too many times. And then you get an interception, and then they don't end up kicking that 60-yard field goal. I haven't heard Kevin talk about that probably in the pandemonium of that win. Maybe he hasn't answered it. I would like to know the thought process behind it because the wind was dead, and Hopkins has made some deep kicks. So I kind of understand the angle, but I just would like to hear from the coach about what his thought process was. I understand both sides.
I think they
of it.
Did ask him about that.
Okay, we'll try to get that answer at some point. But nonetheless, like, then you come out of halftime, a score down, still in the game, and it's 24-9. And I'm sure most of you thought, like I did, the offense can't seem to get touchdowns inside the red zone. They can't, like, can they muster up 24-9? They got to score, you know, essentially two times plus a little bit here. You know, the Ravens aren't done scoring. So I think that, like, that 17 play drive at the 12:29 mark, Walter, wow. Thanks, man. Like the 17
for the Tillman hit.
For the Tillman block.
For the Tillman hit. Hold on, put that up. Oh, yeah, I did.
I think we same timed it. But anyway, so that 17 play drive, which goes 80 yards, which was not really aided by anything crazy. They just made a really nice collective drive. Then they score, and you're like, okay, now we figure out we can do this, right? They unfortunately deal with the muffed punt when they had gotten a chance to get it back, right, and actually score, because I think that got it, what, to 24-17? And then it was like, all right, We got a chance. The muff punt was another opportunity where I'm sure you guys also thought like I did, that may have just shut the coffin on this game. And then inside of that, guys, is another defensive holding, right? It cost them a chance to get off the field early. So then they score again, and it's like they go down and go six plays, 56 yards. Like those two drives, you're talking about the moment, Mike, where you start to believe. Like those two drives are the two moments in the game where I love our old friend Andy, like not the same old Browns. Like those two drives are the difference in old Browns versions versus this Browns version where they where they said, yeah, we've been sloppy in the first half. We had, I'm counting them up here, guys, one, two, three, four. They had seven first half possessions that only resulted in 9 points. They had three second half possessions that resulted in touchdown field goal on top of the Newsome touchdown. So like, it's pretty remarkable. Those are the moments that you look at, like, where did it shift? Well, they came out of the locker room, and although that was a really tough throw and catch, I didn't think Ford's coverage was bad on that OBJ play. Just a great throw, catch, and run.
Yeah.
Like, they bounced back in a huge way. And I think that that's the moment where you look at, like, oh, where did they figure this out? Like, that is the exact time and place that it happens to me. Like, you can just feel the tide shift. And I'm sure you guys, like me, when that, like, you could feel the, like, the stadium was shrinking. And how many times have we watched games where the Browns have felt like the game is shrinking around? You could feel Lamar and the group in Baltimore was really tense. They were really tense.
Yes. Yes.
And they did essentially nothing in the fourth quarter. So that's the moment, man. Like, again, you talk about things to overcome. We already talked about the muff punt and some stuff. Like, the Browns had four plays of illegal contact or defensive holding that were all crucial. A fourth and two in the second quarter, they had a defensive holding that resulted in a chance to kick a field goal that was ultimately blocked. In the fourth quarter, they had a third and nine incompletion, but it ultimately led to getting another chance that they got another one in the end zone for another holding that ended up resulting in a touchdown. And then there was an illegal contact in the first quarter on an incomplete pass on the third and 10. Those were all back-breaking penalties that I'm sure as the game wore on, I can't say enough again how many times I felt like this is a moment where it just fades. And they said, you know, politely, guys, F it. That's not going to happen here.
That's
and,
right.
And found resilience. And they made their share of mistakes. You guys talked about the 12 men on the field stuff. You talk about a muff punt. Specials didn't help. I know, Brad, we talked about keys of the game. It was like, who's going to make the least amount of mistakes and who's going to, you know, not turn the football. They didn't win those battles, right? No. I mean, like, they didn't win the mistake battle here. They just made more winning plays to offset the losing plays that they made. And
yeah,
that's really cool to have a group talented enough to make a lot of winning plays.
Hey, I want to give a shout out to Hunter here on the screen. Yeah. Apparently we're tipping blocks in the chat. We had
which is great.
The said Tillman, Kyle Van Noy didn't
know. Bounty gate going on in here. We better be careful before we know it.
Kyle Van Noy didn't know where the hell he was when said Tillman hit him, and then he got up so mad about the block that he went and committed a personal foul. That was one of my favorite moments.
I will say the Browns were more physical today. Like, if you look across the board, I thought they were clearly the more physical team, which, like,
think about the way David Njoku played this game. Outrageous.
Outrageously.
Yeah, man. And they ran the ball. Like, I don't even know if we've hit on team stats, but like, the Browns ran for 178 yards. They had the football 10 minutes more than the Ravens. They had three possessions in the second half and had 10 minutes more of possession for the game. Like, that stuff is kind of crazy, man. You know, like,
yeah.
Hey, real quick on the end of the half stuff. So Stefanski said that he saw a returner when they asked him about why he didn't kick it with this. He said he saw a returner back and he didn't feel good about it, about the situation. So he got the kicker off the field. Yeah. My question there is, and I don't know what you guys think. Okay, you send Deshaun to the locker room when you make this decision.
Was that
right?
Deshaun's choice? Did the trainers take him? I feel like that's like.
Yeah, I think
I have some questions about that. Like,
yeah,
like
I think he was like, oh, they're kicking it. We're going. I don't know whose call it was, but either way, it was bad timing. My question, though, would be with 7 seconds, is it necessary to go Hail Mary? Why not just run like you had a timeout? Why not try to get 10 yards there and kick it?
It was
from
fourth
there?
And 10, if I recall.
Right.
It was fourth down.
You got to get first down, but. And you have
I think if you don't get the first down there, like, you're giving the Ravens a chance. At, like, they could still turn around. Like, you say you throw an incomplete pass
They're going to throw a Hail Mary with 2 seconds from the opposite 40?
I mean,
that's what you're afraid of?
Yeah, or Justin Tucker.
Yeah, I don't know.
He's not going to make a 90-yard field goal. Sorry.
I wouldn't put it past him.
You don't
a
know
a 90-yarder? We're giving him 90-yarders
sort of a modern-day Paul Bunyan.
No, I think to go with Kevin's answer, he was playing it safe.
Hopkins isn't known for distance kicking either. I mean, he's a bad over 50 kicker through his career. I personally was a little surprised they didn't kick it. I was not stepping back away from it. I'm like, okay, I kind of understand where Kevin's like, these things could go wrong. We got a chance. We'll just chuck it into the end zone, see what happens. We'll go in down one score instead of like we've seen all of these things go wrong. You know, I don't know. It's not.
Yeah.
It was interesting in the moment. I'm certainly like, you know, a lot of furled eyebrows. I'm sure everybody kind of did, but I just don't know that it was as cut and dry as we hoped it would. Because like I'm trying to look at. So the 42. So if you throw an incomplete pass, like yeah, that's not. It's not. I mean, I guess like the Ravens could. Could essentially turn around, throw their own Hail Mary or something. I don't know. It's a weird spot in the field. It's a weird spot. The whole thing
I think sometimes I think we're talking about like a 60-yard field goal. Like we're at this point in life in the NFL where we're talking about 60-yarders. Like yeah, trot your kicker out there. But like it's not normal to see kickers out there blasting 60-yard field goals.
Well, the this opposite 40 isn't too. A 60-yard field goal. That's like
get,
an 80-yard field.
Do
goal.
You get the ball
not,
from?
That's not what I meant.
Do you
I
get the ball from where
we
it was
didn't
kicked?
Kick it.
If it's flipped around,
yes.
Where so they if, held it at?
Yeah. Yes. So if they held it at the 50, Tucker can certainly make a 67-yarder.
Yeah, I feel like this is definitely it's, like the forest for the trees here, guys.
Yeah,
like,
I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud. It's good. Well, I think.
No, I hear you, but I
like this is interesting.
Yeah, I think I mean I personally had no problem with what they decided to do. Like it didn't.
Oh,
I didn't
either.
It didn't bother me at all because I thought that the downside of the kick and what you know, there's the block possibility, right? The Browns had already blocked one, so you've got that running through your head. I think you're just trying to remove negative outcomes, and,
sure.
and
they did. This is all stuff that they talked through on the headset about that decision.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting thing to think about.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's not an interesting conversation, but I just think that
I did not see us having this long of a conversation on this here tonight. Right. I did not see this happening.
I mean, I think
guys,
it was one of the decisions that
don't
people
have
hated
any fun
the most
you
from the game. I think that it's.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, sorry.
You guys,
all right, so listen.
You guys are trying to reel it in. You don't want to talk about it. That's fine. We can move on.
There's other stuff to talk about. There's better stuff to talk about.
Can we actually move on, though?
Yes. Hey, listen, a lot of times in the show, we kind of go through the game as it went down, offensively, defensively. I think today's game was all about moments, though, man. There were so many moments to talk about in this game that it's hard to break it down, just offense, defense, special teams, all that. We will take a minute, though, and you got to start. And I think maybe you're going to call it an entire half a moment, but Deshaun Watson had a moment in this game tonight. Deshaun Watson had a turning point. Deshaun Watson went 14 for 14 in the second half, did not throw an incomplete pass. And not just that, but he looked sharp. He was putting the ball in good spots. And, Jake, I know we had a conversation about Deshaun Watson last week when he was running for first downs against Arizona, and you want him to kind of stay out of harm's way. You still want to see that a little bit, but in a game as big as this one, the plays that Deshaun Watson made with his legs, constantly being able to pick up first downs, and he took a couple hits, but man, what he was able to do both with his arm and his legs in that second half were such a big reason for the Cleveland Browns to win this game.
I just wanted to ask this question to you guys about this real quick. Did you guys realize that he was, like, you know, perfect?
No.
Through. Like in the moment?
Yeah.
Yes.
You did?
Yeah. I mean, I was shocked. I mean, after the first half, the thing that blew my mind was that we weren't seeing any negative plays, right? So whether you're talking about an incompletion or a turnover or whatever, what I kept coming back to was, oh, there you go. You know, he's got it again. And I mean, really the offense in general, I think to Jake's point about possessing the ball only three times in the second half and scoring on all three drives, they were incredibly efficient, right? Like, I think we eventually will have the ability to break this out. I would love to know their EPA splits first half and second half, because
yeah,
their EPA second half was probably about as good as an NFL team can be.
Yeah, I did not. I guess maybe I was just focused on the offense more, but I did not realize that until they said it that he was like whatever 12 for 12 in the moment.
I can't say I was like no. I didn't. I mean, thinking back on it, I noticed it now that they were really, really, really clean. Right?
Yeah.
I don't know that I definitely knew it in the moment, but it's because I have two kids running around during the game. It's an absolute jungle gym of a situation. So that's, you know, you think back on it, long drives, those are good plays, right? So, yeah. You know, you got to stay in front of the stick. So, yeah, good stuff. I don't remember what the original question was, but his legs, right? The ankle,
His play. Yeah, I mean, let's just talk about DeSean.
It seemed like he navigated the tackles well. I think that you guys, like me, are probably – we need to watch it again to see what they did to help those tackles out, or if Garon Christian played really well, or, you know, Hudson had some sloppy moments. But I thought he navigated it well as far as DeSean getting up and getting out of the pocket. I don't think he made any great scramble throws off the top of my head. I thought most of the throws he made were within structure. But I do think he ran really well to keep plays alive and did a great job picking up some first downs with his legs. So – it was gutty. He hurt the ankle relatively early there. So, yeah, the added element of DeSean being the old guy who gets out and around and gets out of situations and creates extended plays with his feet to turn into either throws or runs is like exactly what you want out of it. I mean, that's the version you need of him, right? If he's going to be himself. So, really huge stuff from him. And I need to rewatch the first half to see if it was as ugly as we thought. It's always hard because the TV camera zooms so close in on the line of scrimmage when the ball snapped, you can't see if anybody's actually open, but I'd love to know what, like, I think a good talking point that we can all get into this week is what did they do differently between the first and second half to create those opportunities, right? You know, Andrew's making a good point there about EPA. Like, what did they do differently that juiced up that EPA? Because 17 plays straight, 10 plays straight. Those are big boy drives, man. I thought
This is kind of my point of why I didn't notice it, and maybe you guys didn't, and I thought DeSean was really effective. Obviously, the play that I will remember the most from DeSean was him, the last run play where he breaks the tackle and goes down the sideline and gets into field goal range. That was probably like the best play I thought he made all day, but he made some good throws and stuff, but a lot of it was really... I mean, none of it was like down the field. It was all very underneath, dink and dunk, and it was effective and it was working. But I thought the difference in the second half was that the run game was getting chunks at a time with Ford, and maybe that's why I didn't notice the 14 for 14 in the moment, because I thought they were running the ball so well.
Well, and that segues into the next. That segues into the next point, which is. This may have been as good as the Browns' run game has looked all season. It wasn't, you know, we've talked a lot about them being boom or bust potential in the run game. We've talked about big runs, but then 2 yard average for the remainder of the game, like we saw in, I believe, the Colts game. We've talked a lot about that. That's not how the Browns' run game went tonight. They were really good running the football tonight. I think Jerome Ford averaged 6.5 yards a carry. Obviously Kareem Hunt had some moments. He scored a touchdown. But just overall, the running game, and then throw DeSean Watson in there, the running game looked much improved, and they clearly identified, guys, a spot where they felt like they could be successful, because they wore out the right side on their offensive line. They were attacking the left side of that defense, and it worked all game long. The Ravens never found an answer for it. Just, what'd you see as we were watching it live, or as you were watching it live, that really stood out to you as far as how the Browns were able to run the ball?
Well, the one thing I would say is that I think James Hudson right now is borderline unplayable as a pass protector, but very good as a run blocker, right?
Yes.
And he plays with a nastiness and an edge in run blocking that I think is much more, you know, like what you would expect to see from a player with his background.
I wonder if that's why they wanted to flirt with having him as a guard.
I was just about to say, yeah, I think long term his future might be at guard if he's going to stick in the league, because some of those pass protection reps were really, really rough, you know, and But having said that, you know, they found a way to win with the running game. And again, I go back to the coaching staff. I am typically a pretty vocal critic of the coach when things aren't going well. And, you know, I think this game was a great example of, you know, and to Jake's point, like dissecting how they change things up at halftime will be a lot of fun this week. That will be looking into that, getting a feel for that, seeing what they leaned into, what they found. Because I think, you know, there has been this sort of false narrative out there that the Browns never change things at halftime. I think this is pretty clear, right, where they found some things that worked in the first half and they brought them with them to the second half and accentuated them. And in some cases, you know, they went to a few of the same plays, I think, multiple times, if I was seeing it correctly, right, which is I love that personally, right? Like, to me, you know, talking about the Browns being more physical, the message you send when you're running the same run play multiple times is, hey guys, you want to stop us? We're right here. You know what we're running. Like, go ahead and put your nose in a gap. And the Ravens were not ready for that a lot of times. I mean, there's that absolutely iconic, 7-8 yard pile pusher. Talk about a moment, on that final drive. Like, you see those maybe go for a yard or two, but that he picked up an extra 5, 6, 7. You know, it was a long road that he traveled.
Yes.
And every single member of the Browns offensive line was involved in that pile. Every single one. You know, and I think it was Joel Bitonio that came kind of running in late and added in, you know. So that's the sort of thing where, again, like, we are not used to, as Browns fans, being on the side of the team that is more physical. But I think as you go back through this season, you see that show up again and again and again. And I think, again, from the front office to the coaching staff, they deserve a ton of credit for fostering that level of toughness and physicality throughout the roster.
Yeah, I would say maybe that was a point, like, a little bit there. Like, what the play you're talking about where, you know, the scrum and Bitonio, came across and had the cross block on that one, and then followed. That's why he was the last one to the pile, right? But also on that drive, they used Njoku to do the same thing on a 3rd and 2, and it sprung forward wide open. And it was kind of like at that point, you could kind of feel like Stefanski was feeling it a little bit, right? With the play calling, because he was just like everything he was calling was working, and they had a feel for how to run the ball and how to throw the ball. Plus, you were getting Watson making plays. I would just say, like, another thing that stuck out to me when we talk about real quickly, and I'll give it back to you, Mike. I know I'm just kind of just talking randomly about stuff.
What we're here for.
Remembering for about the game. But so, what's his name? R.D. Hop, right? Misses the extra point after the crazy interception. Okay. And the entire defense comes over to him and tells him not to worry about it. Like, when have you ever seen that on a Browns team before? So if we're talking about, like, culture stuff and the Browns not being the Browns anymore, like, that is something that really stood out to me. Miles goes over to him. All the corners go over to him. They're like, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. You know what I mean? And, of course, he comes back and kicks the game winner.
Stuff. And who were the first people that went out and congratulated him?
Yeah, those guys. So, I mean, that it's just, you know, that's different. That's buy-in. That's, you know, things that you want to, those are things that you see in a winning culture that you're not, you know, we haven't seen in the past.
There's an interesting comment up here about Watson's second half EPA, CPOE stuff, completion percentage over expected. He does lead all quarterbacks in the NFL in second half EPOA and CPOE, which is really awesome. That's really great. Now he only has 86 plays, and the leaders in plays have like 194, 100 and something. Some have crept into the 200s. The problem is in the first two quarters he's 32nd, so got to clean that up. You know, yin and yang. I got made fun of recently for that one. Yin and yang.
Correct.
I think which I had said just because of the yin yang twins. You know,
yeah. That's what you're thinking of. Really,
you have to whisper the rest 3, 6, 5 of the
statement. Come on, guys. Right. Yeah, anyway,
you love the yin yang.
So if he could just be a little better in the first half and be a stone cold killer in the second half, there's Deshaun Watson. So like, I don't know. Good signs. Good stuff.
Yeah, I think if you're going to choose a half to be the best quarterback in football, you take the second. But
that's the right.
But you know, I mean, yeah, the slow start thing is definitely becoming like a trend, right? Where you're kind of asking some of those questions. It was not as pronounced last week in Arizona or in Cleveland against Arizona, but it definitely was there. You think back to the Tennessee game; it for sure was a factor in that game. So, Yeah, I think it'll be interesting, you know, as this relationship between the head coach and the quarterback continues to develop, what kind of tools do they give Watson to kind of get into the rhythm a little bit earlier? Or maybe he just always needs to get smacked and leave the field hobbling and then come back and be lights up.
It does seem to have an effect on him.
It does.
So I have this question about Watson, not here, to take you guys off course again, right? About his performance in the second half. It was excellent. It was amazing, right? But once again, I'll go back to the 14-14, if we look at like the A dot or whatever, or it's probably not. I mean, a lot of it was Njoku carrying people down the field. A lot of it was underneath stuff. I remember one specifically down the field to Cooper where he makes a great catch going to his right and across the middle of the field.
That was like, second and 19. That was the single. Yeah. I know we're talking about that bully ball play with the pushing. That throw on second and 19, I know. Yes. I'll get right back to you, Brad. That was the play of the game because he had just fumbled. It was down like at the 3-minute mark. Mm-hmm. And to get that into third and two off of second and 19, that throw was like wildly important. So I just wanted to say that because that was a big moment in the game. But yeah, back to your question. I think you're going to talk about like there wasn't a ton of challenging throws, maybe. Is that kind of what
I'm asking? I'm asking to you guys, like, did it stand out to you? Like, maybe that's why the 14-14 didn't stand out to me, because it wasn't like a ton of like really difficult throws he was making. And I'm not, it doesn't have to be that way to be successful. I think I'm not complaining.
What I noticed in the first game the Ravens played against DTR was that when they drop zone, they're a huge zone team. When they drop, they depth you. Like, they're determined to be the exact antithesis of the Browns, where they say, we'll let you have a 17 play drive and say that you're going to screw up one or two times and we're going to take advantage of it. So what I noticed in that first game was that a lot of times the Browns would chip release because they were doing that to help DTR, a young quarterback. There was nobody covering the release guys, and they finally found some of those guys. And you're talking about, those are short completions, but that's the right throw in the moment because they're dropping people into coverage lanes. And we'll confirm this with the film, but like, yeah, it's okay to let your 270-pound alien tight end bully some people. Like, that's an okay decision to make. So I think you're right. Like, there weren't like, oh my God, he threw 8 seeds in the second half that just were unbelievable. No, he made the right decision.
I
think that was exactly what you needed from him. More of those. And we'll confirm it, but like, they were just great decision-based plays, taking what's there. And then when he had to make a throw on that second and 19, like, that throw was so good to Coop over the middle there in a vacated portion of the field. So
great catch.
It's a good point from you, Brad. I think that's definitely something on that drive. But I think the Ravens want you to play ball. They're going to force you to play ball that way and say, at some point, you're going to get greedy. You're going to leave something high. You're going to leave a ball a little too far out in front of somebody. We'll give you those dump off throws because you don't want to take those. That's not fun quarterbacking, right? Unless you're Derek Carr. But like, that's exactly the angle that the Ravens are sort of saying is, instead of the Browns are, and they were themselves today, I'm sure you guys would agree with me, they play their brand of ball. We've had 3 holding calls or 2 illegal contacts in the first half. I don't care. We're still going to get a little grabby at the top of your route, and we're going to make it difficult for you. Now, what is his name? Land Grant. What was the official's name today?
Land Clark.
Land Grant is a brewing company here in Columbus.
Not a bad one either.
That crew was calling them. They were calling them, and I've seen so many worse ones let go.
Ridiculous.
So like,
there were 2 in this game that were rough.
I would agree. Well, the Browns said
the JOK one was clear, but one that wiped out the interception, awful. Yeah. Holy, oh God.
So generally, like, my thought is the Browns say, we're going to make every single play as difficult on you as possible defensively, or the Ravens say, we're going to make you think through every play, right? The Browns say, we're going to make you physically hate this play. The Ravens say, we're going to make you think through every play. So that's why I thought what Deshaun did in the second half, them coming to a consensus between staff and quarterback, here's how we have to get this done, was really impressive, because that's what they just bled them out. They just took, they nickel and dimed them all down the field.
And really important to keep in mind contextually that this is the Browns and the Ravens are neck and neck right now, DVOA wise, for the best defenses in the league. Right.
Yeah.
And you know, Jake's point is absolutely right. They play very different types of defense, but they're the best defenses in the league. And I think the ability to find the spaces for that, you know, for to find success, is, you know, a necessary adjustment that they made at halftime,
yeah,
and one that Watson executed really well. But I think they, you know, again, coaching staff, quarterback, entire offense deserves a ton of credit for getting it done. 33 points with, you know, only what, 7 of them off of the defense. So 26 points against the other best defense in football.
Yeah. I think I was, you know,
Serge, by the way, Serge might be the MVP of the comments. He is
fantastic.
Serge is on one tonight. So
John didn't even understood. Yeah. I would just say that, you know, to your point, I think even more credit to the coaching, right? Like, yeah, to dial that stuff up and then the execution as well. Because, you know, outside, not taking any credit away from him, because outside of, you know, his off-schedule stuff was outstanding too. You know, his scrambling and the play that he makes to Elijah Moore off of schedule to get in the end zone. I mean, that's epic Deshaun stuff right there, right? Really good to see Elijah get in the end zone in a big spot like that.
Brad, playing outside. Brad,
you and I are on the same mental wavelength, which is, I don't know if that says anything good about you at all, but we're riding on the same mental wavelength because you keep bringing up my next thing. I'm talking about moments. I'm talking about big things in this game. Two big moments, two big firsts in this game for the Cleveland Browns. One was the Elijah Moore touchdown. Good to see him finally find pay dirt, get into the end zone. And then the other one, even bigger than that, I would think most people would say, but the first interception of the career of Greg Newsome could not have come at a better time. Okoronkwo gets his hand on a ball that Lamar Jackson throws. It pops up in the air, and real aggressively, Greg Newsome comes from deep. I think he was actually – was he playing safety on that play? He was back there.
I couldn't tell.
He comes from deep, catches the ball, and takes it downfield, beats Lamar Jackson and one of the linemen down the field for a touchdown. So Greg Newsome's first interception in the NFL could not have come at a bigger time, could not have come at a bigger moment. He's finally got that monkey off his back, and it comes for a pick. It goes for a pick six, man. Those are a couple really cool firsts that happened for the Cleveland Browns tonight.
I want to say real quick, because I do want to hit on Newsome. I the distribution of targets in this game was really good. I don't know if you guys saw that. So, like, Cooper had 9 targets, 6 catches, 98. Njoku had 9 targets, 6 catches, 58. Elijah Moore, 7 targets, 5 catches, 44, a touchdown. And then Tillman had 3 targets, 3 opportunities to really make a play. So, like, they threw for 213 yards. And if Tillman comes down with a couple of those, you're talking about, like, that 275 to 300 range. Like, that, to me, is a really great distribution of targets, where Coop gets almost 10 and Njoku gets almost 10. Those guys are up there. Moore's getting his chances. And then you get Tillman 4 or 5. And that's the path, guys. I mean, and then Jerome Ford, it's wild to me. I'm sitting here thinking, like, I can only think of one Jerome Ford run, the push run. And he had 107 yards. I really need to go back and rewatch it, 'cause it's like, he had 6.3 a carry, such a better gun runner. I'm sure you guys would agree. Like, that dude is a different runner when he's in the gun. But, like, I just think that distribution, we talk about this all the time. Why can't we get more guys? That's great. Like, that is the formula, fellas. Like, that to me is perfect to get things where they want to get them in the passing game, to be 275 and 125 running type, your 400 yards, right? So, yeah, I'll shut up. But I just, they had 373, but, like, they were right there, I thought, to get to the four. You want to be a 400-yard team. You win, you get to 400 yards and take care of the football a little better than they did today, you're winning. You win a ton of ball games. So that's the path. I just went in on that. But that's cool for Greg Newsome. I'm sure that felt like a monkey coming off his back a little bit there, man. You know, the old Steve Young adage from the Super Bowl, where it just feels like Newsome's been playing and he's been around opportunities and hasn't found one. So to get it's just kind of wild, though. Like, 2 weeks in a row, did that ball hit Oko's helmet?
It did.
So 2 weeks in a row, the Browns have found helmet deflection luck after having awful helmet deflection luck in Seattle.
That's
kind of wild.
Yeah. The turntables.
The turn
living
table.
By the deflection.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, on the Newsome piece, you know, I think it was, you know, it is the luck thing, right? And being in the right place at the right time, and then give him a ton of credit for really, like, hitting the ground running and, you know, looking to score from the moment he caught the ball. Yeah. He got a great break on it, got a great read on it, and turned into a returner. And, you know, I mean, they obviously were a much better team scoring, cashing in red zone opportunities in the second half. But if he doesn't score there, they get bogged down, kick a field goal, maybe, you know, changes things. When you just put, as it turns out, 6 on the board there, it really changes, you know, the feel of the game, I think, pretty directly. And yeah, I mean, that's the sort of stuff that this defense has continued to do this year that we were bemoaning last year. It felt a lot of last year like the bounce of the ball never broke their way for the entire season, that they were in position, they would cause a turnover, and it would fall to another receiver, or it would fall harmlessly to the ground as two Browns were like just out of their reach. And so, you know, for those things to start happening, you know, you talk about ball fumble luck, the, you know, Watson was strip sacked on the final drive that won them the game.
Yeah.
And it bounced right to Wyatt Teller.
He
like
covered it. Yeah.
You know, weird, man. Think about what conversation we're having if that goes differently, right?
Yeah, like Wyatt Teller was a menace today, by the way.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah.
How many times have we seen that helmet ball just go
exactly
20 yards behind everybody? It's, right. It is. Football's weird. It's such a weird sport.
And I think that, you know, the Browns did a lot to hurt themselves today, but they also capitalized on a lot of opportunities in the second half. And I think that was the difference first half to second half. As much as it was about scheme, it was about their intent to take advantage of the opportunities they were given.
Boys, lastly on defense, the thing that really stood out to me as the game went on, because what do you worry about with a team that really applies the pressure the way the Cleveland Browns do against a guy like Lamar Jackson, is if you don't get him, if you over pursue him, if you get too deep down the field, he's gonna make you pay for it. And outside of what happened early in the game, the Cleveland Browns, I thought, were phenomenal as this game went on at not just getting with their front four almost exclusively, getting pressure consistently on Lamar Jackson. Jake, you brought up that you don't think Lamar played very well, and he didn't. And I think a big chunk of that is due to the fact that he was seeing ghosts out there with the Cleveland Browns pursuit. But you weren't just getting pressure on him in the pocket. When he would roll out of the pocket, they did a phenomenal job of having people there waiting for him or chasing him down. There were moments, especially, I remember one late in the game, Za'Darius Smith got pressure on him. He got out of it, and Smith chased him all the way to the boundary, didn't let him get anywhere, and he had a little help on that play as well. I think the Browns, pressure-wise and pursuit-wise, played such a good football game in this one.
It felt like when they slowed him down, it felt like there was waves of pressure, right? If it didn't feel like there was just one pressure, but it felt like they were coming in waves because he would escape, and then your secondary defenders were right there to tackle him. So if, you know, when you start to see that, then you're really influencing him because he can't just break one tackle and get free. It felt like everybody was a part of it. And that's when they really hemmed him in, I thought.
Yeah. I was just happy Keaton Mitchell must still be beat up because I did not want to see any more of that guy. That was,
wow.
Yeah, he could really run.
Turn so that
corner. He only had three carries for 34 yards. I mean, they held Gus Edwards to 11 for 24. He did have that touchdown, but that was largely gifted by a couple different weird scenarios there. So Gus has been killing the league the last 2-3 weeks. So it's encouraging to see them shut that. I thought they handled the run game pretty well outside of the one play where they're like, oh, Keaton Mitchell can break this pursuit angle pretty quickly. So they gave up that one. But other than that, I thought they were, you take that 39 burger out of it. And I thought they were pretty good because Mitchell ended up with 34 yards on the game. So he went backwards 5 yards, his next two carries after that. So you make, I mean, what's the recipe with Baltimore, guys? You know this. We've been talking about it. Make them one-dimensional. And I thought they did a good job. Like, Lamar's runs weren't designed runs. Like, I thought he pulled the ball a couple times. One of those times, J.O.K. smacked him in the mouth, got a little too greedy trying to rip the football out, which I get. But those were just scramble runs that he popped out and made a play a little bit. But they handled the run game. After what we watched the first time, you guys would agree with me, large chunk runs where there were huge lanes to run through, I thought they were really, really good run defense wise, and that'll be fun to break down as well. So, you know, again, they give up 306, but you take out the first quarter. What do you guys think they had yards wise Baltimore in the first quarter? Because I would imagine that's of the 306, that's 127 yards. I mean, that tells the story. Like the Browns out coached them the rest of the way after they got some unlucky thing. Like, I just think it's important to note that the Browns adjusted better and outcoached them than through the rest of it. How many times have we wanted to say that over the years? You know, Harbaugh's
every
record
time
that Andrew pointed out
every time
has been sort of a laughing stock for us for a long time. And, you know, for them to outcoach Baltimore in Baltimore in that environment, like you said, hottest team in football right now with all the defense they've been playing, it's a really cool win for your Cleveland Browns. Like, that's the moral of the story. And they've, they've put themselves in a this is a game to be at this weekend.
I was about to say
it is a game to the Pittsburgh keeps following their method, man. We're gonna let teams outperform us in terms of the yards, but we're gonna score more points by getting some interceptions or weird stuff happening. I just think that this is one where the fans need to make it absolutely miserable in Pittsburgh.
That's right.
And I actually am getting a little goosebumpy thinking about how geared up this team should be for like the Nick Chubb revenge element. Like, it's all sitting there waiting for him, man. Yep. And I to go 7-3, the you're going to see one team in the division is losing. The Bengals are going to make it even harder on themselves. You guys saw the record. They're 1-1. I think do they have a win against the division? They're like 1-4 against the AFC. They're 0-2 AFC North. So if they lose, they're going to put themselves in a real tight spot. And if the Ravens lose and fall to 7-4, the Browns could be 7-3 by the end of the weekend. Boys.
Yep.
Boys. We're talking
yep. with talking the schedule in front of them. They've got in front of them.
In the thick of it with two C's is what we're talking about right here. So it is all that.
So thick.
We talked about coming out of this thing 1-1, right? Yep. We talked about coming out of this thing 1-1.
Now let's get greedy.
Let's get greedy and go. They got to win this thing. Like they have to capitalize on their momentum here and show Pittsburgh that, like, hey, we're not who we played you guys. That's not it. And I think I'm excited to see how they rise up to meet that challenge. This should be a really fun one.
And boys, that's how I wanted to finish this show tonight, is I wanted to send it around the horn and just talk about kind of what you were just getting into there, Jake, but talk about what this win means for the remainder, what you think it means for the mentality of the team and what it means for the remainder of this season. Because we keep seeing it in the comments. Two times the Browns have gone up against a team that at the time was called the best team in football this year. First, it was the 49ers. Now it's been the Ravens, and they've been the hottest team in football lately. And both of those games, they came away with a win.
They broke Brock Purdy now. That's the only reason why they're losing now.
Until today.
Jaguars
fixed him. The Jaguars fixed him. He is fixed now, but the Browns broke him. We talked about this being like a culture-changing thing, a franchise, all-time great franchise victory since they've returned. What does it do for this team moving forward? How excited are you for this team moving forward?
I think what it changes is that, you know, what I feel is changing, and I think our esteemed publisher Barry McBride wrote about this post game. It changes the expectations, right? I was saying before, like the last time I felt, you know, this confident about them not kind of falling on their face was in week two against Pittsburgh, and then as soon as that game started, I was like, why did I feel like this was going to go well, right? Because that's just how those games work.
Yeah,
I had the same feeling, of course, at the beginning of today's game. But I think what the Browns have proven, you go back to the Seattle game, same thing, spotted them 14 points, came back, were in a position to win the game if, you know, they don't have bad helmet luck, right? This team has proven that they're not going to go away quietly. They are not going to. The only time that they've really packed it in was the DTR game against the Ravens, and I think we all understand what that was about. They are not going to do that, and that's not who this team is week in, week out. So you can show up on Sunday in person or at home and expect that whether they win or lose, they're going to fight like hell for 60 minutes to win the game. And in and of itself is all I have ever wanted from a football team, right? Because you got to feel at that point, the results are going to take care of themselves, right? There's going to be some weeks where it doesn't go your way. The bounce of the ball doesn't behave, as we just talked about, but you're going to be in every game. And that is just a goddamn pleasure. After the years of not knowing week to week what team is going to show up, what team is going to walk out of the tunnel. So just know next Sunday, tune in. It's going to be great.
I would say about the Steelers, they have to have a feeling in there right now, like they know they're better than the Steelers after that week two game. Like there has to be a collective feeling like that if things go well, they can kick the shit out of them on Sunday. So that's just kind of where I'm at. And maybe they don't, you know, I'd be happy with a win either way, but I mean, there has to be coming out of this game. This can be a massive springboard for them. I mean, this validates everything that we've been, all the little stuff that we've been complimenting about them, culture-wise, buy-in,
you know, the Stefanski's job this season. We just need quarterback play. Well, you got it for a second half that looked really, really good. And then you win. You've won two massive games, including, as Andrew said, maybe Kevin's signature win in this one that feels better than what I felt in a long time. This team feels special to me. They feel special. They feel different. And I think that going into a week where you're going to welcome the Pittsburgh Steelers into Cleveland Browns Stadium is recipe for a potential ass whooping.
That sounds, doesn't that sound great? Welcome Pittsburgh into Cleveland for a potential ass whooping. It doesn't get said enough, but it should be said. If the Browns sitting here 6-3, they beat the Ravens. If the Browns can beat the Steelers next week, go to 7-3. And you're sitting there with now the Broncos, the Rams, the Jags that got smoked today, but a pretty good Jags team. The Bears, this resurgent Texans team, who, again, that's not going to be an easy. That's not going to be an easy win. The Jets and then the Bengals at the end. I mean, I don't think we're sitting here talking about can the Browns get to 9 or 10 wins anymore. We're talking about how many wins can this franchise get? Can we be a 12-13 win team? That's if they can get this win this week against the Steelers, that's what we're talking about. I think that's how big this win was. I don't think it can be overstated.
This was the one. Yeah. I think that, like, okay, we're going to celebrate this one, live in the moment and all of it. And it's great. It's awesome. It's unique. It's so fun. Win next weekend. Beat the Steelers, man. Like beat them. Like, really beat them. And you're, like, going to get some national respect. Like, real. Because, again, you've beat the 49ers, right? You should have beat the Seahawks. You had every chance with the third quarterback to beat them. And then you just beat the Ravens on the road. Those are teams like the 49ers and the Ravens are teams people consider Super Bowl favorites, right there with the Chiefs, right there with the Eagles at this moment. So you're beating teams that people view as the tier one teams that can go to the Super Bowl. So, like I said, man, it's all right there. Get greedy, but live with the appropriate fear about Pittsburgh coming in and what they can do and how they do it and how they go about it and play your game, man. Take care of the football and I really just can't wait to see how the stadium environment is because it could be really, really fun. And I just, it's a different Brown Steelers game in Cleveland. It just is right now. That's the way it goes. So, rise up to this moment and this opportunity. And I'm sure they're all chomping at it. I'm like that. Kevin's bringing them back in tomorrow, getting ahead of it, getting guys like dialed in, focused up on it. Like, I don't know. I really like that. I think that they understand the impact of this week inside the AFC North, where it's like two huge games for where this thing is going the rest of the way. And then, you know, it let it play out the rest of the way with the schedule. But God, this game puts them in such a good position to take advantage of a real second half run.
I don't know that I could say it any better myself. Anybody else want to say any final parting words before we get out of here tonight?
Browns are 3.5-point favorites against the Steelers at home. Seems low.
Let's go.
It does seem low.
But that's good. That's okay. Let's. I hope
take
that like
the
somebody
the points.
Somebody send the chat like Nick Chubb pictures up everywhere. Like do it for like Nick is the that's what it's all about, man. Yeah. Like I'm really excited about that.
That's what I was gonna say. Don't be surprised after this win that if you hear some national narratives that you don't like, right? Like the national media is probably gonna say some stuff about this game that we know not to be true. Don't realize that what you saw today was real.
Yeah.
And that this team is real. Don't let the nonsense,
win the next three. That'll
deter you from your enthusiasm behind this team. You should 100% believe and be enthusiastic about this team.
And to put on top of what Jake said before, if you are going to make it to the game at Cleveland Brown Stadium on Sunday, first of all, you're lucky because it's going to be wild down there, but make it crazy. Go in there. Think about all the times over the last 25 years where Pittsburgh is coming to Cleveland and all you've seen are terrible towels waving all over the stadium. And it's felt like a Pittsburgh home game. This is, again, to me, it's a chance to define everything moving forward. That's what happened today. And that's what could happen next week. So make it crazy. We got a Niners fan in the comments, 2K teacher, said the only team he feared was Cleveland and wants to see the Browns on Super Sunday.
Well, we appreciate it. Hey, listen, you guys did the YouTube donation side of things. We've never really seen that. So
unbelievable.
Thanks. There's been 700 plus hanging out with us. So It'd just be four losers, which we are, sitting in a room talking without you guys. So yeah. I really,
I think Barry's going to throw us
a pizza I want to say this. Like, I'm watching Browns games and I'm obviously a fan. That's why I started doing this. I know that's why you guys are here too. But like, the first thing I think about is how much fun we're going to have talking to all of you. Like, that's exactly. The thing I look forward to the most is
100%.
Like, oh yeah, man, they won. I get to explain to everybody how they won and why they won. I get to talk about it and hang out, and there'll be more people hanging out with us and talking with us. So like, yeah, the money's great and the donations are awesome and they help us make a better production element here from the OBR. But like, you guys, man, the community is what it's all about. So huge kudos to you guys. It makes it all really fun. And even in the bad times, you guys are here. So, you know, this is, let's write it out, man. Big stuff. Thanks to everybody who donated, Hunter. You just did too. We're not sitting here begging for that by any means, but like, I just want you guys to know that like from the bottom of our heart, we appreciate that stuff. So kudos. Yeah.
Hey, let's leave it at that, because the real MVPs are all of you guys. So shout out to all of you. Thanks for jumping in. Again, 700 plus people in here with us over the last hour. And we know a big part of that is because your Cleveland Browns didn't just win a game in Baltimore, but made a statement in Baltimore this afternoon in the way that they won that game. So the Cleveland Browns, big time win over Baltimore. They moved to 6-3. We're going to take off again. Just remember, for all of you that joined us, thank you for following. Thank you for being tuned into the OBR streaming network. Make sure you also get over and subscribe to the OBR's website at theobr.com, where you can read all the best writing that happens on the Cleveland Browns all week long. And on the OBR streaming network, we go five nights a week with the best video content. So check out Chalk Talk tomorrow with Jake. Check out the Doghouse and Garage Beers with me on Tuesday night. Check out Barry and Fred Wednesday with OBR Weekly, and check out Brad again Thursday night on All Eyes on Cleveland, leading into next week's game day rewind against the Steelers after that Steelers game. So that's going to do it for us, for Andrew, for Jake, for Brad, for Ian in the background, keeping track of everything. We all want to say thank you to you guys for joining in, and until next week, cheers and go freaking Browns, baby.
Okay. Picture this, it's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road, the steeper the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.